you know, the 1976 infestation numbers were adjusted to 2024 dollars. And there was an estimated that in 2024, an outbreak of the size of 1976 would have about a 7.6 million dollar impact on just the livestock industries, and about a 1.8 billion dollar to the total economy in Texas.
Welcome back to Yolitics, guys. We are doing a... Wheeler has this fascination right now with insects.
Do I?
Normally it's fruity beer, but now it's insects and parasites. Imagine that.
Interesting. I didn't realize it had a fascination.
Isn't this your second episode on the topic, on the subject?
I've dabbled around talking to different people about the same problem here.
But this is a serious issue.
And it's as awful as it sounds. Yeah. I'm going to throw this out. Maybe you've never even heard of this before. If you haven't, that's what this episode is all about. It's called the New World Screwworm. And it's just as terrible as it sounds.
It's a fictional sounding name.
But it is.
The economic threat here and the, you know, the livelihood threat is mm-hmm. real for a lot of Texans. Mm-hmm. This is a parasite, an insect that's approaching Texas from the south, from the southern border.
And it feeds on live flesh, which is really gross. And it doesn't really care which live flesh that is. Now, you know, we're going to focus in here some on, of course, you know, cattle and different livestock populations here in Texas, because that's a huge industry, and that's where a lot of the worry is right now. It's also a worry, though, for wild animals. And if you're a hunter, you're thinking about this. Also a worry, though, for domestic pets and even people.
You can walk your dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an issue that people should be concerned about.
This fly is not very discriminating in what it's eating. It just has to be live flesh.
Perhaps that's driving your fascination with this.
Maybe it is. I have nightmares after this.
We ended up tracking down Dr. T.R. Lansford. He is the Deputy Executive Director at the Texas Animal Health Commission. He's the Assistant State Veterinarian, and he is a wealth of knowledge about this very unique situation approaching Texas.
Dr. Lansford, thanks so much for being here with us. Where are you right now? Where are you joining us from?
So good afternoon. Yes, I'm at the Texas Animal Health Commission Central Office here in Austin, Texas.
Usually you're in other parts of the state. What brings you to Austin right now? Is it what we're talking about today?
Absolutely. So today we've had a number of stakeholder meetings with some of our responding government agencies. Earlier in the week, we had a Senate hearing on New World Screwworms with the Water, Ag, and Rural Affairs Committee at the Texas Capitol. And then we also had a Animal Health Commission meeting this week as well. So it's been a busy week. A lot of it New World Screwworm centric.
Well, lay this out for us. For somebody who's just hearing that term, New World Screwworm, what in the world is that?
Sure. So I think everybody is familiar with maggots. We've probably all seen maggots in trash or you know, rotting materials. The screwworm fly is a type of fly that makes maggots. The difference, though, is that the maggots of the screwworm fly consume live tissue. And so it's certainly a pest of a parasitic pest that impacts anything that's warm-blooded, but primarily livestock and wildlife. And if you think about what's in the environment, you know, that's what the greatest number of hosts are going to be. So, go ahead.
No, where does that name come from? Screwworm? Does a fly burrow down into its victims?
Yes,
or what?
Yes, sir, absolutely. And so that's where that actually comes from. That maggot or larval stage of the fly, that's inside the living tissue, consuming that tissue, looks like microscopically there's some bumps on it that make it look like a screw. And then as it eats it, it bores into the flesh and kind of screws down into the flesh.
So this truly awful stuff.
Yeah, this tiny.
It's horrific. It causes very painful lesions and infestations, and certainly can set up for some very bad bacterial infections and things like that as well.
Well, it has Texas ranchers spooked right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Walk us through why, because there have been sightings of this screwworm and samples of it taken in Mexico, and it's approaching the southern border, and a lot of ranchers are concerned here.
Absolutely. So we've been watching this situation unfold since early 2024 as it got into Guatemala and Nicaragua, and then up through Central America and into Mexico towards the end of 2024. Certainly That fly population has continued to build in Central America and up through Mexico. The reason primarily for that rapid movement has been related to infested animal movements. Mm-hmm. But from an impact standpoint, what we're concerned about is this is a foreign animal pest of great economic concern. Not only does it cause, you know, pretty significant detriment to animals, but it causes a lot of economic loss, not only from potential death loss, but increased production costs associated with inspection and labor and treatment costs. You know, the 1976 infestation numbers were adjusted to 2024 dollars, and there was an estimated that in 2024, an outbreak of the size of 1976 would have about a 7.6 million dollar impact on just the livestock industries, and about a $1.8 billion to the total economy in Texas.
Wow. Yeah, it is a huge thing, you know, when they've modeled that out. You know, we've seen these outbreaks in the past here in Texas. In 1972 alone, Texas had 90,000 cases of this reported, after the previous year they only had 444. That really gives you an idea of just how prolific these flies are. And you know, once they get into an animal and infest that animal, and that animal starts running off and carrying those larvae with it, and then those hatch and they're around other animals, and it just starts jumping and jumping and jumping from one to the other. This seems like it would be a really hard thing to wrap your arms around. And I know that there have been a lot of efforts underway, and I would imagine that that's been a lot of what you were talking about, this screwworm-centric meeting schedule that you've been having there in Austin. Do you get the sense that state leaders fully are grasping what's going on here and you know, able to sort of mobilize against this?
Sure, absolutely. And so we've been, as an agency, preparing for and getting ready to prepare for this. In the hopes that it never gets to us, but certainly, you know, the old adage of prepare for the worst and hope for the best, right? And so we've been preparing for close to 2 years now, along with our partners at Texas Parks and Wildlife, is the two lead agencies for addressing this pest. I think the things to keep in mind associated with this, and you brought up an excellent example of the 1972 outbreak, why it got so large, had to do with unrestricted animal movements. And so those infested animal movements really is what spreads this infestation in long distances over short periods of time. So the fly itself naturally, you know, it's like anything else. If there's a large number of hosts in an environment, it's not going to go very far. And even if it has to travel some, the estimated maximum movement of that fly naturally is about 12 miles in its life. And so to move the distances that it moved in 1972, and certainly as we've watched it move up through Central America and Mexico, it's very evident that that was tied to infested animal movements, primarily associated with livestock, especially cattle in Mexico. And that's one of the big things that from a response standpoint that we certainly are working with our stakeholders on, is one of the things that will be very different, is one of the more critical response pieces will be movement controls. Mm. And so we've been talking to our livestock industries about that for, like say, going on 2 years, about how important that's going to be so that we can mitigate the spread of the New World screwworm until such time as we have adequate numbers of sterile flies to accomplish re-eradication. As we mitigate that spread so that we can protect the marketability of the rest of the state's livestock products and its wildlife.
How close has this gotten to us so far? It seems like, you know, as I've done research on this and talked to people, you keep hearing rumors like, oh, they found a wild animal, you know, several miles from the border or 60 miles from the border. How close do we know that this has gotten from Texas?
Absolutely. So the closest case to this point was back in the end of April, and it was about 62 miles from the Texas-Mexico border. The current closest case is about 79 miles. That was one that was just disclosed, I believe, late last week. And there's a number of cases kind of around that between 80 and 90 miles. And so those are the closest active cases. The one that was 60 miles is an inactive case, meaning that that infestation has been resolved and they've dropped sterile flies in that area. But certainly we're watching those cases that are, you know, 80, 90 miles away with great concern. So one of the other parts of the response, it's kind of a three-legged stool approach that includes movement controls, but also surveillance. And so we've been engaged with USDA since July of last year in active screwworm trapping efforts along the Texas-Mexico border. And as the sterile fly dispersal polygons have changed, we've moved those trap lines and are in the process of reestablishing a trap line with a move that was announced this week, well, at the end of last week, actually. But those surveillance activities are ongoing.
And Dr. Lensford, explain what's at stake here. Are ranchers afraid that their herds of cattle or pigs or goats, that those could become infested if they have an open sore here? And then if they do get infested, I mean, beef prices are already sky high right now. This could just decimate the industry, I guess, if this spreads across the state.
Right. Well, I think there's a couple things to keep in mind there, right? And so certainly the impact on production is one of the things we're trying to safeguard. And so if we have an incursion, keeping it as small geographically as we possibly can to mitigate that impact will be really critical. You know, this is
These are flies, though, Dr. Lansford.
Right.
How in the world do you contain them?
They don't fly. The fly themselves don't travel very far. It's the maggot stage or the larval stage when it's in an animal, and that animal, infested animal, moves is how that pest moves so far so quickly. And so again, it's going to be movement controls to make sure that animals that are moving have been inspected and treated to prevent movement of those larvae in an animal. And so certainly that will be a big part of the movement control. It's not that we are not going to allow any animals to move. It's just that there's going to be a process that includes inspection, treatment, identification, and permitting, just so that we know that they have been through the process, and we're doing everything we can to not move infested animals.
Now, let's talk about sterile flies, because that's how you try to stop the flies. You create a bunch of your own flies that are sterile. They mate with the females who are out there in the wild, and hopefully prevent them from being able to produce babies. I mean, I'm putting that in very simple terms. The USDA just broke ground on this new facility down there at Moore Air Base down in the valley to create, you know, millions and hundreds of millions of these sterile flies each week. Problem is, that doesn't, you know, get fully operational until November of next year. And as you mentioned, this is getting too close for comfort to Texas. You know, interesting thing is, it's not far from where that facility went in Mission, Texas. We used to have a facility that produced hundreds of millions of these sterile flies each week. What happened there? Why did that go away? And you know, who bears, you know, blame for that? Is it the federal government, the state government? You know, why did we let that go?
Yeah, so I don't know that I have all the answers on why those were closed down. Part of it had to do with, we had successfully, you know, as a population and regulatory agencies, not only in the United States, but in Mexico and Central America, had pushed that pest all the way back into South America, right? And there was a sterile fly production facility that was put in Panama that produced the sterile flies to build a buffer zone just north of South America to hold that fly in place. And so there's a number of reasons why potentially that fly got loose and came. A lot of it had to do with changes in land use at the Darien Gap. That was the buffer area where there were much greater numbers of livestock that were moving through there. And so there was a greater opportunity for that pest to move on some of those livestock. But the thing to keep in mind is from a biological standpoint, is you're exactly right. The reason the sterile fly technique works, or sterile insect technique works, is the screwworm female only mates once. And so if you saturate the environment with sterile males, and that's what the goal is there, that breed the natural females, the natural female lays an infertile egg that never hatches. And so just over time, through attrition, the population dies out. And so that's the name of the game, is to get enough sterile flies to release to overwhelm the natural population and then essentially breed it out.
And right now we're getting those from that Panama facility because we don't have our own ability to create those yet.
Historically, historically, you know, we needed between around 500 million sterile flies per week to eradicate it from the United States all the way through Central Mexico and Central America to South America. The current production facility in Panama, it's the only one that's operational at this point, is cranking out about 110 million sterile flies per week. Hmm. We still need about that 500 mark. And so with the plant that's being converted from a sterile fruit fly facility in Mexico, in Matapa, Mexico, it's going to produce about 100 million sterile flies, screwworm flies, come in this summer and towards the end of the year. So that'll put us up to close to 200 million sterile flies per week. And then with the facility coming on at Moore Field in South Texas, again, there's some time involved in getting that thing built, but that will get us up to about our 500 million that historically we've needed to accomplish eradication. So the name of the game in the meantime is doing everything we can. If we have an incursion of new world screwworms in Texas or the United States, the name of the game will be doing everything we can to limit the population of flies in your environment. So that means disrupting that life cycle. So that means—
But if you're not getting— If you don't get enough of those flies though, let's say if an outbreak were to come here, if an animal or two got through and it did start to spread here, is there a contingency plan for what you do then?
Yes, so absolutely. I mean, and the contingency plan is what we've been preparing for because we know we don't have enough sterile flies right now. So if we can find an outbreak early, we have a chance with the number of sterile flies we have, in addition to our other strategies to include movement controls and treatment. We have a number of treatment products now that we didn't have back in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. Combined with those, the movement controls and the surveillance, with the number of sterile flies we have access to right now, there's a chance that we can eradicate it again in the United States. It'll still be in Mexico. And let's be perfectly clear that as long as there's new world screwworms in Mexico, Texas and the United States are at increased risk. But we have a chance of limiting that impact in Texas. So even if it gets larger than that in Texas, and that's part of the response plans, type 1, type 2, type 3 responses, we'll do everything we can, and it'll certainly take everybody in the community. And when I say everybody in the community, I mean like any animal owners, veterinarians, our public health officials, our livestock producers, everybody to do their part, to do everything they can to limit this life cycle of this fly in the environment.
Not everyone has a herd of cattle or livestock that they tend to, but there will be a lot of people asking, if this comes across the southern border, is my pet going to be at risk?
So certainly the companion animals, and to include pets, can be infested with new world screwworms. The good news is EPA has done some conditional approvals and emergency use authorizations on a number of products that are commonly in use in the companion animal medicine world for things like flea and tick control. They're also effective against new world screwworms. And so there's a number of products that are ready to go if there's a new world screwworm case in a companion animal to not only treat but prevent those infestations as well.
And Dr. Lansford, the animals that would fall victim to the screwworm are going to be animals that already have some type of an open sore, right? They just don't find any, you know, healthy cow or bull out there, right?
Absolutely. The biology of the fly is the female is attracted to wounds on an animal. And so certainly the fly will come to a wound. That's where they lay the eggs, is around the edges of the wound. And then the eggs hatch and the larvae burrow into that tissue there. So they can also get infested, or animals can get infested in other openings as well. So not uncommon to see infestations in females like cows at the time that they're giving birth, because there's exposed other tissues there that the screwworm can infest. But generally speaking, you're dealing with a wound that's going to become infested.
Obviously, this can get into wild animals as well. They can be greatly impacted by this. It can even set up shop in a person, as disgusting as that thought is. So this is going to be one of those things. It seems like this is, you know, for a lot of people, this may be the very first time they're hearing about the new world screwworm. We all probably need to be a little bit more aware of this and being able to spot something that looks off or odd. I've been talking with some ranchers who say that even though, you know, it's quote unquote, you know, not here yet, they're already, you know, kind of making it more of a practice to look for all of their cattle and to kind of, you know, give them that up and down sweep and make sure there's no open sores. I mean, this might be something that, you know, animal owners and so forth might have to look out for.
Absolutely. So a good friend of mine that's another veterinarian in Virginia at a meeting, he said, you know, probably the most important thing or the best thing to treat screw worms or to put on an animal for screw worms is eyes. And he's absolutely correct. That's one of the going to be one of the more critical things that animal owners in general can do, not just livestock producers, but wildlife managers and companion animal owners can do is inspect their animals frequently. If there's a wound, treat the wound to prevent infestation or catch a wound early if there is infestation and kill that infestation out while they're treating the wound. So certainly those are going to be the most important factors associated with limiting that population in the environment. Should we have screwworm flies get to the United States, is that early wound treatment and breaking that life cycle.
Yeah, because as people should know here, it's not that, I mean, it's not like the worm is killing you just by being there.
Right.
What happens is you become sort of a host and then, you know, you further spread this along, number one, and then number two, in cases where it does become fatal, it's because that wound just gets bigger and bigger because more flies get attracted to it.
Absolutely.
And then maybe more wounds open up and they sort of bleed out or the fluid comes out.
So that's,
do you have an internship program open for Jason here, Dr. Lansford?
Say, looks like
he's looking for something to do this summer.
Just
looking for something.
Just give me the gory work, apparently. That's what I'm focused on.
No, absolutely, you're correct. It's and it's not the infestation itself of the fly or the maggot that causes the fatality or the mortality. It the secondary bacterial infections and associated septicemia is what is actually fatal. And that's usually somewhere between a 5 and 10 day situation if an animal is not treated. And so certainly it is a fatal condition, but it's easily treatable. There's a lot of good products out there that can be used to treat these animals with that and prevent those mortalities.
Sounds like hunters here in Texas should be aware of this too if it does eventually cross the border here.
Yeah, so we've worked very closely with our partners at Texas Parks and Wildlife to get information out, and they're working very hard to get outreach to land managers, wildlife managers, hunting communities to prepare them so if they encounter this, they know what to do. Again, we're trying to do everything we can, all of us, to, if we have an incursion, to stop that life cycle. But even until the point we, you know, right now when we don't have New World screwworms in the United States, everybody doing their part to do surveillance. So again, we want to find that first case, if it's here, as rapidly as possible so that we can prevent a widespread infestation.
Let me ask this last question, Dr. Lansford. You talked about all the efforts being put into, you know, trying to stop it before it gets across the border, the long-term efforts, you know, to make these flies that are sterile. But what's the worst case scenario here? You know, what keeps you up at night on this?
Yeah, so that's an easy, unfortunately, an easy answer. what keeps me up at night is that we get into what we would call a type 3 infestation or outbreak. And that's where, you know, if you look historically in the United States, you draw a line across Texas from about Del Rio over to San Antonio and then down towards Victoria or Corpus. Anything south of there, the screwworm fly will overwinter. And so that means it may slow down when it cools off, but it will always be there. Things north of there, because it gets cold enough, the fly will die out during the winter. And so in you get far enough north for sure, and certainly one of the things is not very comforting, but it's a fact for our states north of us that we trade a lot of livestock with, this will be a seasonal issue if it gets to be a very large outbreak, right? Because it gets cold up there and it will stop during the winter. The issue becomes we'll live with that seed ground down there in South Texas until such time as we get enough sterile flies to accomplish eradication again.
You don't want people to be underinformed here or uninformed, but you also aren't trying to freak people out.
Right.
I'm curious as we go forward, you know, we've been talking again with, you know, ranchers about this as well. You know, just being realistic here, is this something that we are likely to see here in Texas this year?
Yeah, so we have not, the Animal Health Commission, minced any words. You know, we are very hopeful that we're wrong, but given the situation in Mexico, you know, we expect to have to deal with New World screwworms at some point. Now, when that is, I can't guess that. If I could guess that, then you wouldn't be talking to me today, right? I'd already be gone, living on an island somewhere. But, you know, I think the realities are that at some point we will have to deal with this at some level. I think the important thing, to your point of you know, not causing panic, is this is not a swarm of locusts that is descending upon us, right? This is a fly population that moves in and infests wounds. And so we have healthy animals and we're treating wounds and doing everything we can to not give the flies a place to lay eggs and have larval infestations. Then we're going to go a long way into controlling or mitigating that risk from this fly. So we have to think about, you know, the epidemiologists use the words attack rates and things like that. This is not, again, a swarm of locusts that's descending upon us. This is a fly that specifically attacks wounds or infests.
Well, no offense, Dr. Lansford, but we're all hoping that you all are wrong about it being something that we eventually definitely have to deal with here in Texas. But yeah, all indications are that it is definitely headed this way. Really appreciate you taking the time today.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
So he said the reality is here, despite all we're doing,
it's coming.
It's coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming. And that's a sobering thought here.
And it's already too close for comfort. And yeah, we've got this, you know, facility that the federal government is building down there in the valley to, you know, mass produce these sterile flies. But we're several steps too late on this right now because they're coming, they're getting really close, and that thing's not going to be up and running for a long time here. And that's what I've been hearing as I told you, I've been dabbling around in conversations on this, and I've been hearing like, hey, we welcome that. That's going to be great. Wish that would have started, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, whatever. But, you know, better late than never with that.
But the whole
sounds
situation,
like it's going to be extraordinary.
It has farmers and ranchers spooked.
It does.
You don't have to be on the border down there in South Texas to be worried about this thing because it could, you know, the fly can travel 12 miles in its lifetime, but this is moving a lot faster than that over the last 2 years.
Yeah, one of the many people, I shouldn't say many, I haven't talked to like scores of people about this.
Scores?
I've talked to several people about this. And
you
one
like forums or town halls on this? What?
On the screw worm, yeah. One of the people I've talked to is James Foster. He is with the Texas Farm Bureau as a board manager there. As you would imagine, the Texas Farm Bureau really keeping very close tabs on this because it could really have a tremendous effect on livestock. He happens to be a farmer and a rancher and has a bunch of cattle. And I talked to him about this. And the weird thing is that, you know, it hasn't come into Texas as far as we know yet. He's all the way up in Dallas. So he's got this huge buffer zone, even if it does come into Texas. But he is already, you know, kind of, you know, as we just heard, putting those eyes on the cattle, checking them out, making sure that there's no open sores or anything, if for no other reason than just muscle memory to start getting used to that way of doing things. Because at some point, I think he and a lot of other ranchers across the state figure, this is definitely coming, and I'm going to have to get into the habit here of dressing wounds, pulling those cattle aside, making sure that they're okay so that we don't ever have to deal with this.
And so when I was talking in the beginning of the episode about you being all into this lately, you actually went to see Mr. Foster at his ranch in Collin County. Here's what he said.
So James, let's talk about livestock. How many head do you have?
Well, all in, we've got about 200 head of cattle.
Screw worm, you know, maybe people have heard of this a little bit, but you know, it's been in a headline here and there. I don't know how many of us actually go down in and read the articles. I'm sure you're way down in the details of this because this is a huge threat to a huge industry here in Texas.
This is a very big threat in Texas. If this gets started in the state of Texas, it could be a $1 billion impact.
Jeez. How does that impact the industry if it comes here? I mean, we've seen it go to other places and some of the things it has done. What could it do here if screw worm is here in Texas?
Well, it could really cut down on the numbers of cattle because this pest works very quickly. You know, we've got some places where we have cattle that have a lot of brush on them, some larger acreage places, and there's some cattle we may not see them for a few days. And if that was to get started, they multiply so quickly and they do so much damage so fast that you could actually lose livestock to it.
So as far as we know, it's not here in Texas yet, but it's gotten uncomfortably close across the Mexican border.
The last report was 62 miles.
Okay, and the flies that spread this and the wild animals that they spread it to, they don't care about that border.
Right, and wildlife is one of the big things we're worried about, is wildlife carrying that across the border. And from what I understand, there's not a whole lot of surveillance being done by the Mexican government down there.
We know that a lot of surveillance is being done here in Texas. How do you feel about that right now? How do you feel about the efforts to sort of try to keep this at bay? How do you feel about that right now?
Well, I feel like we're moving in the right direction on that, but I feel like we're behind the game. It's so difficult to build things with, you know, all the regulations and, you know, EPA is trying to work on it to try to get it faster. But a lot of the regulations and stuff of starting a new facility and building it and have really slowed things down. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, I went to the groundbreaking of the sterile fly facility in Mission, Texas. Mm-hmm. And
this is a place where the federal government would essentially be growing these sterile flies to essentially collapse the population of these infected flies. And they can crank them out, a ton of them, but you got to get this place built first, and that's the few steps behind that.
Right now, the flies are coming from Panama, mm-hmm. from the facility there, and being dropped out of airplanes in Mexico. Mm-hmm. The numbers just aren't big enough right now, so we really need that new facility online to really be able to push these things back.
And it's going to be a while.
It's going to take a while to get it going.
So what do you do in the meantime, just as a rancher, first of all, how do you prepare?
You've got to be very diligent in inspecting your animals, and you just have to really keep an eye on things, and if you do see something, you need to report it. Take a sample and report it.
I would think that being here in the Dallas area, you would think, I've got some buffer here, because, you know, this is an issue that hasn't even, as far as we know, crossed into the Texas border down south at this point. Do you feel like you've got a buffer? Do you feel like you can breathe a little bit?
For now, but I think it's only it's not a matter of if it gets here. I think it's a matter of when it gets here.
And as you know, a board member with the Texas Farm Bureau, how big of a concern is this? How much are y'all focused on this and involved in this?
This is one of our big things that we're working on right now. And this is one of our priority items.
Is this something that we could see this year in Texas?
It's possible.
If you had to typify what has happened in other places where screwworm has been, how did it settle on their cattle industry there? What ended up happening?
Well, it was big. We had a big outbreak of it here in the 50s, mm-hmm. and it took until the 70s to eradicate it.
That's a long time.
It's a serious problem, and financially, it'll be a serious drain on the cattle industry.
We all know what beef prices are like these days, you know, from the retail perspective. But that is one, you know, little glimmer of hope right now for people who grow our food. Because if you are, you know, raising cattle, you can get pretty top dollar for them right now compared to what it's been in years past. If you lose one head right now, that's a big cost.
That makes a big difference on your bottom line.
Yeah, just one.
Just one.
So, you know, again, one, just taking down one head of livestock there would be a big loss for him financially, but it would also, of course, be a big threat to surrounding livestock and so forth. And again, that's talking about just one cow. And back in 1972, with the outbreak, again, Texas alone had 90,000 cases of this. So imagine that just multiplied out across the state.
As if we need any more reason right now for beef prices to be any higher than they are.
Correct.
You know?
Yeah, this is something for all of us to keep an eye on. And, you know, as we heard at the beginning, we're all going to have to get a little bit more accustomed to, you know, if you have an open sore, you know, once this arrives, you know, and everybody we've talked to believes that it will be arriving at some point. You know, just kind of keep a closer eye on those things with yourself, with your animals, or other animals.
Cover them up.
Something to watch for.
Be careful.
See, you know, all of us will be fascinated by this at some
point. Maybe you can get an internship with him this summer. We can send you away to South Texas to look for this fly. All right, guys, thanks so much as always for joining us for this episode of Y'all Ticks.
We'll see you again next week.